call our Education Policy Committee to order. Good afternoon, members. Thank you for being here on time, and my apologies for starting 10 minutes late. As you know, we have an incredible amount of work in our committee, but we also have a lot of constituents who are very, very active and very interested in the work that we do, and we're very happy that they are here. So we've had tremendous amount of visits this year, and I know that members will be coming in, but I believe that we have a quorum. So let's start our hearing with Senator Dahl, Senate File 2118.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the Education Policy Committee. I'm really pleased to introduce to you Senate File 2118. And this is not a bill that I've thought up. This is a bill that's actually a priority for the First Lady, Michelle Obama, and she has asked the Governor, Lieutenant Governor, that we enter into this agreement with military families and especially their children. So very briefly, this bill, we all know how military families can be very mobile, and a lot of the families encounter school challenges for their children for enrollment, eligibility, placement, and graduation due to frequent relocations around the country. And so there is a interstate compact on educational opportunity for military children, which does require legislative action for us to join that particular group. It does provide for uniform treatment of military children transferring between school districts and states. Minnesota, I think this maybe only affects a couple hundred students, but still, if we can help those 200 students with a smooth transition in their formative years of their education, that would be very helpful. So I have three testifiers, and I think you'll hear from all of them, and they came, I believe, from Washington, D.C., or parts west, east. The first testifier is Martin Dempsey. He's the Midwest Regional Liaison for the Office of the Assistant Secretary of Defense.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, committee
Welcome
members.
To the committee.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here this morning. My name is Martin Dempsey, and I'm the Midwest Regional Liaison for the Department of Defense State Liaison Office in the Office of the Deputy Secretary Assistant Defense for Military Community and Family Policy. Our mission is to be a resource to state policymakers addressing the issues that affect the quality of life of our military and their families. I'm here regarding the educational transition of active duty military children. This issue is addressed in language contained in Senate File 2118. The Department strongly supports this language. Prior to my current position with the DOD, I spent 24 years on active duty in the Air Force. During that time, my family moved 8 times in 24 years. Our children were in 8 different school systems between kindergarten and 12th grade. Our youngest daughter went on to 3 different high schools in 4 years, uprooting her at the start of her senior year. This is not an unusual scenario for our military families today. On average, most children will move at least twice during their high school years, and most will attend 6 to 9 different school systems between kindergarten and 12th grade. These military families encounter significant school challenges when dealing with enrollment, eligibility, placement, and graduation of their children due to frequent relocations in the course of their service. In 2005, working through the Council of State Governments National Center for Interstate Compacts, the Department of Defense assisted in development of an interstate compact that deals with these issues. The compact reflects input from policy experts and stakeholders from 18 different organizations, including representatives of parents, teachers, school administrators, military families, and federal, state, local officials. Participation by states is completely voluntary, but to participate, a state must adopt the compact through legislation. We're very grateful to Senator Dahl for sponsoring and all who are positive considering the approval of this policy that is currently reflected in Senate File 2118. In closing, the compact addresses the challenges and concerns of our military school-aged children and lessens the emotional impact of moving from school to school district. Adopting the compact will create a positive impact on our military families, which in essence has a positive impact on our operational readiness and our national defense, and is strictly viewed as retention and readiness issue for the military. One of the greatest factors in deciding whether or not a service member continues for a career in the military is the quality of education and service available for their children and any undue hardships placed on them. Adopting the compact is a significant step in the right direction addressing this issue. Thank you again for your consideration. I stand ready for questions.
Thank you very much. Members, do you have any questions for Mr. Dempsey?
And Madam Chair,
Senator Dahl,
we will have the General Counsel come up here to give you a little bit of idea of how the compact actually works. We also have another speaker that can give you a little more detail, but is there any questions for Mr. Dempsey initially? That'd be fine.
Let's proceed with the testimony,
okay.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Welcome to the Education Committee.
And I believe I have Brigadier General Steve Hogan on my right, and on my left, Rick Masters, the General Counsel for the Interstate Commission on Educational Opportunity for Military Children. I'll turn it over to General Hogan.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I am Steve Hogan, and I serve as the Executive Director of the Military Interstate Children's Compact Commission, which is located in Lexington, Kentucky, but it serves the National Commission as the Secretariat and the Agent of Execution. And it is indeed an honor to appear for you today to represent the military families that not only reside in Minnesota, but those Minnesota natives that serve in the armed forces nationwide. Military child faces a great many challenges, academically and otherwise, as they move from state to state an average of six times during their educational careers from grades K through 12. This compact seeks to address this aspect of challenge that some would call hardship with a comprehensive, cooperative, and functional policy of states. For this purpose, the compact was enacted in 2008 and has continued to grow and where 46 states and one territory are members, one district of members, providing assistance and coverage to 98% of the military children nationwide. The focus of the compact is on the interstate transition of these students, with areas of emphasis on enrollment, placement, attendance, eligibility, and graduation. Seeks to provide a common framework and process through the member states, addressing these issues mentioned during those transitional time periods. It is important to state that the compact is only concerned with the transition of the child and rightfully and by design not to impact or usurp local education standards or authorities or to dictate preferential treatment. Respect of state and local authorities in the education system is essential for the proper function of the National Commission and Compact. Frequently, state legislatures have had concerns regarding autonomy, the necessity, and the cost of instilling the National Compact, which I would like to discuss at this time. Concern number one, does the compact usurp local authority? My answer to this is absolutely not. By adopting the compact, the state is only giving up the right to act unilaterally in respect to an interstate transition issue of which they have no authority from the onset. The compact, again, supports state responsibilities and authority in respect to its education policies. What it will do in the case of an interstate problem is to collaborate and communicate with both states involved, the sending and the receiving states, to identify best case options for all parties involved. Concern number two, why do we need this in Minnesota? We are already doing everything possible to support our military children. Firstly, thank you. State efforts to accommodate military children are laudable and greatly appreciated. However, your influence only goes to the border of Minnesota. Adoption of the compact ensures that Minnesota's investment is protected as those children transfer to another state. Simply put, the compact is a bridging agent, and without connection between the sending and receiving states, Even the most progressive efforts inside the state will build but half of this bridge. Concern number three, how much does this cost? Simply put, in Minnesota's case, is $2,000 total. The formula that the compact uses is $1 per child of residency, with a floor of $2,000 and a ceiling of $60,000. In view of 1,267 students of military, active duty military parents residing in the state, $2,000 representing the floor amount is your total dues. Dues amount simply allows the national office to pay your commissioner's travel expenses when he is on national business. Council members are normally not in paid positions and are not in any of the member states, and only those that require their state councils to meet and furnish in person will furnish travel expense reimbursement and the amount decided due by the state. In summary, it is my view that the strength of this compact lies within the network of professionals whose collaboration ensures that the child is not unfairly disadvantaged or advantaged as they go through their academic career. Thank you, and I look forward to your questions.
Thank you, General. We so much appreciate that you're here to speak on behalf of military children.
And thank you,
Senator Dahl, we're happy to support this effort. Thank you for your testimony. And we're going to take testimony from Mr. Masters, and then we will proceed to questions.
All right. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to be here today. I'm Rick Masters, and I am the General Counsel for the Interstate Commission on Educational Opportunity for Military Children, which is the administrative body consisting of one representative from every member state, which as the General says, are 46 states plus the District of Columbia. And it's responsible for implementing the compact and enforcing the provisions of it so that this accomplish more than simply being a bill which contemplates good work that should be done. It actually is a contractual agreement that the states have entered into constituting the Interstate Compact. I also have worked and continue to work with the Council of State Governments for over 15 years in the area of interstate compacts. Have written a legal treatise on the subject that was published by the American Bar Association, and can answer questions if you have any about the effect of an instrument like this. I think the fact that 46 states have adopted it should be reassuring to you that this certainly does not represent an attempt to subvert democracy or education quality in Minnesota or in any other state. In fact, it is a solution that maintains the sovereignty of the states rather than have the federal government, as it probably could have, enact a statute or regulation which might have preempted the state's ability to manage this. And I think it's to the credit of the Department of Defense that from the outset, when CSG partnered with a number of education stakeholders and the Department of Defense to draft the model language for the compact, that the Department of Defense agreed that this should be a state-based solution, that states should continue to manage this aspect of education as they do other aspects of education. In that regard, then, how did we arrive at these major substantive areas that are covered by the compact? Because there are four primary areas in which the compact seeks to relieve transitional issues. The Department of Defense paid for a study that the Johns Hopkins University performed 7 or 8 years ago, in which they interviewed literally thousands of military families and did other research to determine what are the primary problems that military families encounter when a deployed mom or dad, or sometimes mom and dad, have to move from one state to another very rapidly because they're under orders to do so, and they have to uproot their families and move their children in grades K through 12 from one public school district to another public school district in another state. And that study found that the four areas that are focused as the substantive objectives of the compact are the areas where these families who move from 6 to 9 times during an average military career encounter when they make these transitions. And so if it would help, Madam Chair, I'll just briefly cover the four objectives and give you an example of each so you can get some idea of how the compact seeks to remedy these problems. First, in the area of enrollment, When a family is transferred from one public school district to another, obviously they have to have a record on which their child can be enrolled in the receiving state school district. Believe it or not, there were school districts who were not accepting photocopies or non-original or non-certified copies and would delay enrollment of some of these children of military families for days or weeks or even months. Under the compact, for example, with an enrollment issue, the compact provides that the receiving state into which the family moves would provisionally enroll the child, accepting a photocopy, if you will, even if no certified record is immediately available, and then would allow the sending state from which the family came 10 days in which to provide the record. Another area which the compact focuses on is eligibility. This has to do with participation in extracurricular activities. Let's say you have a student who is a four-point student on a four-point average and wants to join the Beta Club or the National Honor Society. They move to the receiving state school district because mom and dad are ordered to quickly do that, and they find that they've missed the candlelight induction ceremony by which people were allowed to become members of those two societies, notwithstanding the fact that they have a grade point average that would qualify them. The compact, for example, in that case, would say the receiving district should provide an opportunity and make a good faith effort to provide an opportunity for the child to participate in that activity if they are otherwise qualified. So if they have the four-point average, they don't have to be prevented from participating simply because of the timing over which the family had little or no control. Placement and attendance is the third area that the compact seeks to deal with, and this has to do with states continuing a placement when the student moves from the sending state to the receiving state. And it is presumed under the compact that the placement decision of the sending state was correct, and that provisionally, when the family moves to the next state to which they are deployed, that the receiving state will place that student in the same grade level that they were in when they moved, but still has the right to do independent testing. And if the receiving state decides, no, we think you should be placed this way instead of that way, the receiving state still has the right to do that. But it doesn't slow up the enrollment or the attendance process by delaying the student's opportunity to be provisionally placed in the receiving state. In addition, this section of the compact also allows for some flexibility for deployment-related absences. If a family member, if a mother or father who is a military member is going to be deployed on foreign soil, for example, for perhaps a year or more, the family is asked to be given special consideration by the local school district for some excused absences for deployment-related needs. Again, it's not imposed or mandated, but school officials are given the discretion to consider that as a basis for granting some additional deployment-related absences. Finally, with regard to graduation, as in all families, a student who has completed 12 years of education would like to graduate with their classmates, and military kids are no different. And where possible, under the graduation provisions of the compact, we ask states to consider using alternative exit exams if they were met in the sending state, and it's possible to substitute that for any requirement that you may have in Minnesota or any other receiving state if they have successfully completed some other national normative achievement test. We ask you to accept that. There are states where they have a criteria that does not permit, in the state's view, the quality of education to be maintained if they don't have an exit exam like that. And if Minnesota is one of those states, you certainly have the right to maintain that standard, and the compact doesn't require you to waive it, simply makes provision for a reasonable accommodation if that's possible. And if not, it asks the receiving state to work with the sending state from which the family came to see if they can obtain a diploma in the sending state based on their last year of work here. So in summary, that all of these provisions give discretion to school officials and does not take away the ability of any state to maintain its quality of education. But it does try to establish a common denominator among the member states which allows these students to have an opportunity to participate on a level playing field. It's not a special opportunity, but it's an equal opportunity, and each state is asked to make a reasonable accommodation to do that and not penalize these kids simply because their parents have sworn an oath to protect and defend the Constitution and all of us. There are aspects to the compact after you get through the primary objectives that I would put under the category of primarily the governing structure of the compact. It is not unlike other compacts that the state of Minnesota has adopted. And, in fact, last I checked, Minnesota has adopted approximately 27 interstate compacts regulating everything from parole and probationer transfers to placement of children to placement of juveniles, and even three other compacts regarding education, concerning qualification of educational personnel, higher education, and other education activities. So it's nothing new. We are hoping that Minnesota will join the states of Oregon, New York, and New Hampshire, who are the only which are the only four states that have not joined us at the table. We hope to welcome all four states to the table at our annual meeting, which will be held later this year, and would love to see a representative from the state of Minnesota at the table. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them. And, again, thank you for the opportunity to talk about this important public policy.
Thank you, Mr. Masters. Members, do you have any questions for any of the testifiers? Senator Dahl, do you have any final comments?
No, and I appreciate your indulgence, and I think it's let's be that 47th state to help our children of our military families. I just want to let you know that the Department of Education is fully on board, and talked with Mr. Cordy about this, and again, obviously an initiative of the governor, lieutenant governor, and the first lady. So I thank these gentlemen for taking the time to fly to our heat wave that we're enjoying in the state of Minnesota this week, and we hope that they have a good trip back. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Dahl. Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question. Why did it take so long for Minnesota to become to come where we are today to make this decision? Why are we going to be number 46 instead of number 1, 2, 3?
I don't know if I can answer that question precisely. Madam Chair and Senator. I don't know if I can precisely answer the question as to all the reasons. One reason, I believe, is that there's a relatively smaller number of eligible children and military families, although every one of those are important to those families and to each of you, I'm sure. But I suspect that the numbers have had something to do with it. Probably the vagaries of the legislative process, something else to do with it. And the important point, though, is as long as there's any state that's outside the compact, we can't guarantee these families the opportunities to have these accommodations once they cross the state line.
Ma'am, if I may,
I think that the
small number of population is probably why Minnesota has been reluctant. But one of the things that bears mentioning here is the small states, the 2,000 and less, have got a special consideration because of not having a high-density military population in any one area. So with a military population that's scattered along the state lines, it's more important for an involved commission that communicates regularly so these individuals out within civilian society can participate. And as a note, your neighbor state, Wisconsin, and several other small states are some of the more active states in the commission with less than 2,000 military children.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you. We are very proud to do this and look forward to see how we can truly implement all of this so that military children are very successful in our schools. Thank you for coming to Minnesota.
Thank you,
Senator Dahl. So Senator Dahl recommends that Senate File 2118 be recommended to pass and refer to the State and Local Government Committee. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
Thank you, Chair and Committee.
Thank you, Senator. Next in the agenda, we have Senator Sieben, Senate File 1821. Welcome back to the committee, Senator. You have a lot of bills this year. You've been very busy.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and committee members. I appreciate your time hearing this legislation today. I do have a delete all amendment, and if you'll allow me, Madam Chair, I will briefly explain the bill as introduced and then what the delete all amendment does.
So that's the A1 amendment, members, and you have that in front of you. Please proceed to explain the A1 amendment, and then we will let's adopt the A1 amendment. Oh, no, explain the A1 amendment, then we will adopt it in case members have any questions. Thank you, Senator. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The bill is introduced required that if requested by a hiring school board, the Board of Teaching should share the details of a report made following the discharge, suspension, or resignation of a teacher or administrator. I heard concerns from a number of individuals and interested parties who felt that this language was too broad and might include frivolous or false accusations. So the delete all amendment narrows the scope of the bill and seeks to amend a different area of statute, but I think gets at the problem that we're trying to address. So the delete all amendment does not involve the Board of Teaching. It does require that a school district would share with the requesting school district if a teacher or administrator resigned while a complaint or charge involving an allegation of an act of violence toward or sexual contact with a student was pending. In an instance where a teacher may choose to resign rather than to proceed with an investigation, this language would ensure that the new district or the districts that's looking to hire that teacher is involved with an allegation that district could learn that there was this situation where the teacher was previously employed. So to be clear, the bill doesn't make the investigation data public, but allows that data to be shared between school districts. By way of background, a school board member in a district that I represent wanted to testify on this bill and actually brought me the idea for the legislation, but he couldn't be here today. But he told me that on his tenure on his school board, he knows of numerous occasions where a teacher may have resigned upon learning of an investigation, and so then the district stopped the investigation because the teacher was leaving. So as you can see, that creates a loophole where then the teacher applies to the next school district and then that district, unless there were criminal charges or things that would come up in a background check, that new district that's hiring that teacher is unaware of the situation. So here to testify.
Before we go to the testimony, Senator, why don't we ask the members if they have a question on the A1 amendment, and we will adopt it, and then we'll move to have the testimony. Members, do you have any questions about the A1 amendment? If not, all of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted. Please proceed, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So with me today is former Senator Kathy Saltzman, who worked on the original legislation that you'll see referenced in the delete all amendment. And so perhaps we could hear from her first, and then Grace Kelleher from the School Board Association is also here to provide testimony.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
There. I'm Kathy Saltzman, former state senator, also the state director for Students First, who also believes and wants to thank Senator Sieben for this important legislation. Just a little bit of background for you. In 2008, there was a lot of discussion in this committee. I know Senator Wieger was a co-chair of this, on the policy chair, and also the co-author of this legislation with me, where we looked at where, when districts were hiring teachers, they would do a criminal background check. But there were situations that were in investigations that were filed with the Board of Teaching regarding allegations or other disciplinary action that a school district would say it would be really helpful to know that before we hire teachers. And so there was a lot of very good discussion on that. And so legislation was then passed in 2008 that required a school district to request from the Board of Teaching any sort of investigative reports that had been filed on disciplinary action. That passed, I believe, almost unanimously. It was very strong, like, support. In 2009, we came back because the Board of Teaching said there's a lot of situations as we look at this that is this sexual misconduct, alleged sexual misconduct, attempted, that we are really unclear about. And so we changed the law so that if there were any investigative reports that had been in a teacher's file, that a school district needed to, like, review those. A teacher also had the ability to be able to explain that, but at least a school district had that sort of background information. So I think what we're seeing here is that there is another loophole, and that if we really want to talk about the safety of kids and school districts being able to make good hiring decisions, that this is a good step in that direction, and I think it really completes again. We think we have addressed an issue, and yet something comes up. I think there are numerous situations. Nobody wants to bring them forward because they are confidential in sometimes, and this is where I think it's between a school district to be able to share that someone has left instead of really followed the process through, and then there it may be something where it can be resolved. But if someone's leaving so that it doesn't have to be reported, I think that's not in the best interest of our students and our school districts.
Thank you, Senator. You know, when we have a former senator, I have to be careful. A constituent was looking for you the other day because she said, Senator, you call her Senator Salzman, and I wouldn't know where her office is. So sometimes they don't know when we call each other senators, the senators testifying. But thank you, Senator. Ms. Kelleher.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Madam Chairman, it could be Senator Kelleher as well.
Yes.
Senator Wieger, we're bookends almost on this bill.
Members, okay. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association, and I am pleased to be here with Senator Sieben, and I applaud this bill going forward. One of the biggest responsibilities school board members face is keeping our children safe. It's something that MSBA has been committed to for a long time. We partnered with Senator Saltzman, and we went forward and did more aggressive background checks into teachers. Unfortunately, as far as we think we make it here in St. Paul, there's a lot of attorneys out there that advise staff that when they're in a situation like that, the best possible move they could do legally is to resign before there are any investigative data. So I would agree with Senator Saltzman that, in fact, what we did in 2009, we thought we're going to catch all these cases. The fact is now, in 2013, that's not the case. So with that in mind, members, I ask you to support this and help school board members do everything they can to not only ensure we have a quality staff, but we protect our students first and foremost.
Thank you, Ms. Kelleher. Senator Sieben.
Madam Chair, thank you. I just wanted to show members that I asked the Legislative Reference Library to pull up news articles on past instances of inappropriate conduct between teachers and students and point out an example of where I think that this law is really necessary, or this proposed legislation is necessary. So in a hypothetical situation, if a 18-year-old student had a inappropriate relationship with a teacher and the district learns of this, it would be in violation of that district's policy. So they would confront the teacher and tell them that they were beginning an investigation, you know, in this hypothetical. If the teacher resigns at that point, there may not be there will not be criminal charges filed because the student was 18 years old, for example. Mm-hmm. So then what happens is, even though that is something that the new district would definitely want to know, that was a potential problem, as everyone here would agree, that new district wouldn't have any access to that information because it wouldn't come up on a criminal background check, and the investigation wouldn't have been completed as outlined in the law that Senator Saltzman authored a few years back. So really, that's, just to clarify, that's the loophole that we're trying to address and close with this proposed legislation.
Makes sense, Senator. Thank you. Senators, do you have any questions? Senator Clausen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would ask Ms. Butler for a legal interpretation of the current data privacy law and ask, does this supersede the current law or is it in violation of the law, of the current law?
Ms. Butler. The amendment to the?
The proposal in front of us.
The proposal in front of us actually amends the data privacy.
Okay.
That she, Senator Sieben had a legal amendment that doesn't amend the education code, and now it's in the data privacy provisions.
Okay. Any other questions, members? Senator Franson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm curious to know, when, I mean, I don't have enough background on these type of cases to know when does it, an allegation, how often does that get investigated? Because, I mean, anyone can have an allegation and just to open a case, but is there a threshold in the school districts that is commonly followed? Or I'm just concerned about just the influx, I guess, or opening the door for so many allegations. I mean, they can happen really easily, right? And this, someone can leave their job because they're just leaving their job. They don't want to deal with an allegation unfounded. It's like a frivolous lawsuit kind of example. Can you kind of give some background on or any insight on, do we really talk about a lot of allegations? Are they that easily investigated? I just wonder if on the tipping scale you would err on the side of over-investigating and then more and more. I don't know. I'm just curious about how many cases we're talking, how many allegations are being investigated. What's the scale of this problem?
Well, Senator Sieben.
Well, Senator Franzen, I would answer in a vague way by saying we don't know the scope of the problem, because right now, if there is an allegation and a teacher resigns, the teacher resigns, and the next school district doesn't necessarily find out that teacher resigned over these supposed allegations or just that they left mid-year. The school board member that contacted me said, in our instance, it would have been, when we're looking to hire teachers, if we would see that a teacher left mid-year but couldn't find out why, it would have been helpful to be able to know if they had left for an instance. Again, this is only an instance where the allegations involve sexual contact or violence toward a student. It's similar to, I think, what has happened in, been publicized a lot, and obviously has happened in the Catholic Church, is that we want to have a higher standard for our teachers and administrators since they're working with children. And be clear that the employee could still, if they did resign around an allegation, it would be, obviously they could talk about it. They could disclose that to the district that they're applying to. But I do think that this is the best way we could get at this, I think, a real problem of where there is this loophole where there may be, I don't know how much, but there may be inappropriate sexual relationships occurring between students and teachers or administrators, and this is the way to try to address it.
Senator Franzen, and I think an issue that is important here, this bill is going to go to judiciary. So the jurisdiction in this committee is the actual pending. So an investigation happened, this individual leaves. So what is the obligation of this school to share that information, and how does the other school actually know? Because that case was not closed. So that's kind of our jurisdiction. We want to know, we want to make sure that the schools actually know. Now, the question you ask related to the allegation, the substantiation and all of that will be reviewed in judiciary, because that's really the legal ramifications of this and what are the legal implications. But for us here, I think Senator Sieben is asking us to adopt kind of this pending situation. So the case was under investigation, but then the individual left. And so how do we how do we make sure that there is transparency and information shared in a way? So, you know, make sure, Senator Stephen, of course, you will get a lot of these questions related to that question that Senator Franson asked you in Judiciary. So, obviously, that's of great interest to our committee as well. Senator Carlson, do you have a question?
Yes, and it kind of touches on what you just said, Madam Chair. And I guess I would like to ask the Senator Reed, the testifiers, aren't these people in this chain mandatory reporters? And if they're mandatory reporters, then the school board can't stop the investigation. If this is a potential crime against a child, they have to report it, and it has to go to law enforcement.
Senator Stephen.
Madam Chair and Senator Carlson, if the student is 18, then that doesn't apply in that particular instance. As far as the mandatory reporting, I would need help from counsel, I think, to answer that, how it would apply to other victims if they're under the age of 18 and in that relationship. But obviously there's something inappropriate occurring anyway, so I don't – are you asking if the teacher who is the offender is going to report that?
Senator, if I may, Senator Carlson, I think these are clearly questions that are of profound interest to us, and I understand, obviously, you know, the seriousness of it. Unfortunately, the jurisdiction over the report, you know, of although the administrative responsibilities of the school, you know, kind of the nuances around the judicial aspects of it need to be dealt with in judiciary. So if I, you know, if you have a response, a quick response, Senator Stephen, counsel is asking me to deal with this in judiciary. Very definitely, these are judicial issues that that are quite complex, actually. And, Ms. Kelleher, do you have any feedback on this? Obviously, with your experience, you probably can give us a kind of at least a brief statement on the experience that you've had relating to these cases.
Well, Madam Chairman, I know recently MSBA and with House and Senate help put together a bill that required that if an employee was charged with a felony, they wouldn't get paid. So we've been sort of nudging around this whole issue of how do you handle bad actors. And let me tell you, Madam Chairman, I feel there's very, very few teachers that fit into this. We usually have high-quality teachers, but as we do in every profession, there are some with an imbalance of power that a school district or a teacher to a student has, takes advantage of that situation. And it's those folks we are really looking to get at. And this is a relatively new problem. I think pre-2009, they used the lack of the law we had then. So now since that's been brought forward, attorneys in particular suggest to their clients that this might be the opportune moment to pull out of the process. And they're doing it. I mean, and it's hard to blame anyone, but they're taking advantage of the legal system where they can sort of draw this curtain on the process that the next employer can't get under. And I think this bill would help us just lift the veil on those who have been using it inappropriately.
Thank you. Thank you. Senator Clausen, Senator Nino.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a little bit of a clarifying or a comment. We're looking at acts of violence toward a student or sexual conduct towards a student. Those things are required to report it to the Board of Teaching. I'm just wondering, why don't we make the Board of Teaching responsible then for this? In other words, the school district could contact the Board of Teaching and get the same information rather than going back to the school board or the school where the person was previously employed.
Senator Salzman.
You're on that one, Madam Chair, and Senator Clausen.
You know
Senator Clausen. Of course, I absolutely do. I think this goes back to the discussions that we had, where there has to be, as I look at that section, which was passed, the other section that is related here, the bill, the way that the language there talks about if disciplinary action has been taken against the teacher. And so there may not have been disciplinary action taken against the teacher. So this is sort of that gray area where if the teacher leaves the school, there's not been action taken. The other thing that we changed is that what is the Board of Teaching found itself of what is attempted sexual misconduct, what does someone define as that? And so we took that out. And so it was just if there's been any disciplinary action taken against a teacher that is in the file, it had to be shared. If a teacher were to leave a school district in, say, December and there's no action that has been taken, then they could apply to another school district. And this is where there has been an investigation started, but then it ends because this person is not their employee anymore. So I'm trying to put these two bills together. I'm trying to get a context of where that loophole is, and perhaps council can, you know, provide a better, you know, idea of that. But this is sort of the gray area of where you have, and again, very few teachers. Teachers, we have great teachers in Minnesota. It's just when we have situation like this and like we want to protect kids, we get into this area where we're really uncomfortable about talking about this because we really don't want, like, acknowledge that these things are happening in our schools, but they sometimes are. And how do we protect kids? And also protect school districts. Because one school district may be saying, I wish I could share this with you, but right now I can't tell you. And here's someone calling your district, and you're like, I can't really answer the question.
And members, I would like to encourage you to just kind of stay with the narrow scope of this bill. So that's it. You know, what you just said at the end, this is basically sharing information. So we're not changing. The amendment is what is before us, and that's all this bill does. So please make sure you stay within. Yeah. Senator Clausen.
Thank you. And, you know, I understand that, but school districts are required immediately in these situations to report it to the Board of Teaching. Whether it's been reaffirmed or not, then you do the investigation. And it seems to me the Board of Teaching is a logical place for prospective employers to go to check on the record of a teacher to see if they have been reported. So you are required by law that you have to conduct an investigation regardless. Before you start the investigation, you have to report it within so many hours, so many days. So it seems to me the Board of Teaching would be the logical place that school districts could go to see if there has been an allegation against a teacher, rather than putting the onus and get into all kinds of issues dealing with data privacy back to the previous school district that employed this teacher. So I would advocate the Board of Teaching really should hold the responsibility for this.
Thank you, Senator Steven.
Madam Chair and Senator Clausen, it's my understanding that, and that was the direction that the original bill went, was to have it reported through the Board of Teaching. But one thing that we found was that if the Board of Teaching begins an investigation and then doesn't have cause for issuing a finding, for instance, in the case of there being sexual contact between a teacher and a student, but the student was 18 years old, then that wouldn't show up in the next, in the report filed with the board, so the new hiring district wouldn't have access to that information. So really, I think that although we did talk about that, we thought that this was a good way to go because it allows the district, when they're checking references or at some point, in the process, that if they if an employee resigned while there was a complaint pending, again, that only involves violence or sexual contact, it's not, you know, anything else that could come up, that then that district can share that information and talk about it.
Thank you, Senator. And perhaps, you know, this bill has one more stop if there is something that we can do, you know, to make it clear, that would be to the advantage of both, obviously, the school district as well as the individual senator. Please work on that. Senator Nino.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My apologies if you touched on this and I missed it, but the current language applies to all employees, and the proposed new language is specific to teachers and administrators. Why not all employees?
Senator Stephen?
Madam Chair, that's a good question. I'm not sure to answer that. I think that perhaps counsel could answer, could help me answer. It obviously says that the employee was a teacher or administrator, and this subdivision 16 is referencing, is that correct, all employees of school districts?
Senator Butler, any advice? Sorry. She was listening to everyone. The question from Senator Nino is, why only teachers and administrators and not other employees? So Senator Stephen would like to know if there is was a kind of a specific reason for narrowing it down to these particular employees and not having others included.
Madam Chair and members, I didn't draft the amendment. I think it was just the bills introduced was narrowed to teachers and administrators. That then the council who does the data privacy stuff drafted this and just kept that narrow focus.
So, Madam Chair,
and the previous language said also board concerning teacher or administrator. So I assume, you know, the amendment, of course,
carried that
about
over.
The same universe. Senator Stephen.
Madam Chair, I think that that's a valid point. And if Senator Nina would be willing to delete the language up to the words the employee, then I think that would address the topic, because the whole subdivision 16 is talking about school district employees.
So the language will read, or an employee resign while a complaint or charge involving the allegations was pending? Is that what would you like to do?
I would take out the and, too. So it would just say the employee resigned.
Okay. Could you, Ms. Butler, read the language for us?
Madam Chair, members, the amendment would delete the words the employee was a teacher or administrator and.
Okay.
So that clause, too, would start with the employee and then go on with resigned, etc. Okay.
Is that clear, members? Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'll officially make that motion to amend that.
Thank you. So Senator Nino proposed that amendment. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The amendment to the amendment is adopted. Any other questions, members? If not, Senator Wicklund, do you have a question?
I just want to express a concern. May I do that?
Yes, absolutely.
Senator Torres Ray and Senator Stephen, I understand very much that the purpose of this, and I can definitely see why we want to protect kids. I just want to say I have a real concern that employees who have a complaint that could be unsubstantiated will be subject to that information being revealed if they resign. And I just feel that, employees will need to be advised that if you choose to resign after a complaint's been filed, you're really giving up your ability to see this process through and have it, you know, substantiated or not. So that's my concern with this. And I'm not a lawyer, so, you know, maybe it's clear. But that's my concern.
Thank you, Senator Wicklund. I think that's a pretty good point, Senator Stephen, that you might want to bring to the attention of judiciary, because, you know, there could be thousands of complaints, and I think that's what Senator Franson wanted to get at, too. So is every complaint and pending complaint going to be transferred now? So it's just the volume of work. And I think that concern is clearly expressed here. So we think that you have one more stop and perhaps substantiated I don't know how you fix that because, you know, the situation is that that particular complaint was not completed and then the individual leaves. So it's kind of an awkward, you know, I don't know how you handle that. So this will be really a source of multiple questions in judiciary, and we want to make sure that that message is given to the members of that committee, because it's an issue that is of concern to us as well.
Madam Chair, I'm happy to share. I mean, I'm sure that issue will come up. I think that on balance, though, if we're looking at trying to best protect students, to make sure that again, the teacher would have had to resign. And again, it's only involving acts of, the allegations have to be around acts of violence or sexual conduct. That though that does raise it, at least in my mind, to a higher bar than applying to all complaints. And again, it's data shared between school districts. The data is not becoming public. Mm-hmm. And so the employee, if they resign, I think Senator Wicklin makes a good point, would be advised to know that if they're resigning, at some point, if they go to apply to another school district, they'll have to explain the circumstances surrounding that resignation around the allegations of violence or sexual contact.
Thank you, Senator. And the other issue I think that Ms. Kelleher addressed was that this is a very small percentage of cases, and so that we trust that, you know, we're really protecting an important group of students, and so hopefully it will not generate. But nevertheless, we want to make sure that that statement and Senator Wicklin, Senator Francis, and Senator Carlson's concerns are related to judiciary. Senator Clausen, you have a final question.
Yep, thank you. Yes. I think it's important to point out that these cases are also reported to the local police, mm-hmm. and they're involved in the investigation as well. At least that's been my experience. The other thing, I do support Senator Nino's amendment. I think now we're looking at a bigger group, but it also negates my argument about the Board of Teaching, because now we've opened it up beyond just the teaching. So maybe as the other committees look at this, they maybe separate those two out and look at treating them a little bit differently, because my point about the Board of Teaching, I still go back to that, and I think it's a valid thing to look at. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Any other questions? So Senator Nino moves that we recommend Senate File 1821 to pass and be referred to judiciary as amended. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No.
The bill is passed. Thank you, Senator. And we... Senator Kent, we're going to ask you to please... Senator Dahl is presenting another bill, so he will be back. For those who are waiting for Senate File 530, we will hear it next.
That one's going to get bogged down in judiciary.
Senator Kent, I know I surprised you with this. I'm sorry. Yep. But Senator Dahl was called to present another bill. So thank you for taking.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Glad to step in real quickly. Everybody's ready to rock and roll, so we're glad to do it. I want to thank you for hearing this bill. I am here to introduce Senate File 2207, a bill that instructs the Minnesota Department of Education to report on K-12 students' experience with physical education. If I may, I would like to offer the A1 amendment to get the bill into the shape in which we want it.
Thank you. The author moves the A1 amendment. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted. Please proceed, Senator.
Thank you. There has been much needed attention recently on several key issues of student wellness, reflecting both the critical effects on long-term health of our children, as well as the impacts on their ability to learn effectively. We are rightly talking about childhood obesity, as well as the need for students to have healthy and healthy breakfast and lunches to ensure that they're ready to learn, in addition to having a healthy foundation for their lifelong wellness. Another important aspect of both long-term health and effective learning is physical activity and physical education. It goes without saying that good habits in physical activity are key to healthy living. There is also significant research that demonstrates that movement and physical activity during the school day has positive effects on learning. Because of this significance, the legislature in 2010 adopted physical education standards from the National Association for Sport and Physical Education, also known as NASPE. This was a very important step forward for Minnesota's kids, but we all know the need to monitor and ensure effective implementation and to adjust programs to reflect ongoing research and best practices. Therefore, Senate File 2207 is designed to move forward with such monitoring by assessing the implementation and impact of the 2010 policy and evaluating the current state of physical education in Minnesota schools. The bill asks the department to survey school districts and provide a report on the amount of time spent in PE, the nature of PE classes, and schools' use of data in assessing student fitness, as well as details about students' access to recess. Here with me today to provide more details and answer questions are Jack Alwell of the Minnesota Association of Health, Physical Education, Recreation, and Dance. He is also a PE teacher in the Farmington School District. And we also have Tobin Nelson, who is a researcher with the University of Minnesota. Mr. Nelson.
Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Tobin Nelson. I am an associate professor in epidemiology and community health at the University of Minnesota School of Public Health. And today I'm going to be speaking with you about the need for better understanding ways our schools can promote and facilitate physical activity among students. In 2008, the Minnesota Department of Health released the Minnesota Obesity Plan, which outlined a comprehensive strategy for reversing the epidemic of obesity in our state. This plan called for urgent action due to the significant threat of the obesity epidemic to the health and economic security of the people of Minnesota. Included in that plan were recommendations to strengthen standards for providing physical education and improve implementation of quality physical education in our schools. A significant portion of a child's typical weekday is spent in school. Studies that objectively measure physical activity show that adolescents are generally sedentary during the school day and that the activity they do accumulate occurs transitioning to and from school, during physical education courses, in interscholastic and intramural sports, and during recess. How those times are structured by adults has an important influence on the overall amount of physical activity adolescents get. In my research with the School Obesity Policy Evaluation based at the University of Minnesota, we have found that the need for promoting physical activity has become greater in Minnesota schools, particularly schools that serve low-income communities and our most economically disadvantaged populations. Physical activity among secondary students drops significantly as they get older. This is likely related to the lack of requirements for physical education in our schools. Despite recommendations for schools to improve their offerings, many policy indicators we track in our research have remained unchanged. Perhaps the most important indicator, required physical education courses, has recently declined after a period of improvement. We need to better understand why we have seen such little progress and identify feasible ways to help our schools. Part of the story, in my view, is competing priorities for instructional time. It is common for physical education to take a back seat to the three R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic, when schools are trying to meet their academic goals. The reality is that kids need to be physically active in order to be maximally successful in academics. We need to find a way to prioritize both. Of course, a mountain of scientific evidence demonstrates that physical activity is good for health. But activity is not simply important for its contribution to preventing obesity. Physical activity has a wide range of benefits. Regular activity promotes mental health, and consistent with the academic achievement goals we have for our state, promoting activity in schools is associated with improvements in academic performance in the classroom and on standardized test scores. Minnesota is outperforming many other states on important youth health indicators. Part of the reason for this, in my view, is that we create standards and structures for schools to provide an environment that is conducive to the health of our children. I urge you to support Senate File 2207 so we can better understand and identify feasible solutions for schools to provide the best possible environment for our kids to be healthy and achieve their academic goals. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Jack Allwell. I am in my 37th year as an elementary physical educator in Farmington, Minnesota. I am also the past president of Minnesota AFERD, soon to be SHAPE Minnesota, the state PE and health organization. I want to talk to you about a strong physical education program. They produce a surge of benefits for both its participants and the schools that promote them. A number of years ago, during a wave of cuts, our school board presented us with a daunting but legitimate challenge: prove the relevance of physical education. It is now 8 years later, and we have compiled considerable evidence. Our initial response was to launch a literacy PE class for struggling readers. Students who scored below the national average on the NWEA standardized test were enrolled over the winter in a 15-minute class at the start of each school day, in which literacy components were embedded into active games. Our participants showed gains 4 to 5 times the national average and 2 to 3 times that of their peers. This class and these results have been consistently replicated at various grade levels and in a number of districts. These outcomes are supported by brain research demonstrating that exercise turns on the brain. Blood volume to the hippocampus, the center for memory and learning, more than doubles during exercise. This is significant because the brain stores no fuel of its own. It is dependent upon the cardiovascular system to supply its needs. It should come as no surprise, then, that Dr. Charles Hillman at the University of Illinois found that students test a full grade level higher in reading following moderate physical activity. So, if fitness in general and cardiovascular fitness in particular is so crucial to learning, then how does physical education impact this? To find this out, we tested locally and looked nationally for evidence. This fall, and again in the winter, we tested all North Trail third graders in the NWEA reading test and the Presidential Youth Fitness Aerobic Pacer test. Students who were at or above national average scored 20% higher on their cardiovascular scores. However, the post-test showed that our Lit PE students improved nearly 5 times as much due to their extra 15 minutes of physical education a day on their cardiovascular tests. The reading gains were also more than double of their peers. As fitness increased, so do test scores. This mirrors large population studies in California and Texas involving millions of students, which show a significant correlation between fitness, test scores, attendance, and lower disciplinary issues. We know already that daily physical education fights one of the worst enemies of learning, obesity. A Robert Wood Foundation study found that for each day per week a student received physical education, there was a 5% less incidence of obesity, up to 28% if they received PE daily. But can we measure the impact of a dramatic increase of physical activity and physical education during the school day? We have seen the effect of adding 15 minutes extra to students who already receive 25 minutes daily at North Trail. But perhaps the most dramatic impact can be seen at Anthony Elementary School in Leavenworth, Kansas. Anthony was ranked 10th and last in reading and 9th in math. The following year, they went from once weekly physical education to daily physical education and improved their lunch menu. In a single year, at Anthony, the number of students who passed the fitness test rose over 1,300%. And they went to first in math and second in reading. But that's not all. The school culture was changed dramatically. Disciplinary office referrals dropped from 438 to 18. There are numerous other examples of dramatic changes at all levels when the amount of PE is increased. Titusville, Pennsylvania, lengthened its middle school day and took time from other subjects to implement daily PE. In 1 year, they went from below state average in reading and math to 17 and 18% above the state average. At the present time, we do not have a good handle on what is provided for PE across the state. All Minnesota children deserve to have the same opportunities at success, and PE has proven to be an important factor in that. Currently, MDE does not track the quality or quantity of PE in Minnesota schools. This bill will provide the information necessary to get a snapshot of how the 2010 standard law is working and to better understand how we can improve PE across Minnesota schools. I would like to encourage you to support the passage of Senate File 2207 so that we can begin building a healthier and smarter Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Members, do you have any questions for the testifiers? Senator Clausen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to offer an amendment to the amendment, please. On line 1.8, you're requiring physical education reporting, and I know that we have some large school districts that have trimesters, and that's been omitted. If we could add trimesters into that, so it would read in terms of semesters, comma, trimesters, comma, quarters, or school years.
Madam Chair, I'm definitely agreeable to that amendment.
Thank you. All of those in favor of the Clausen amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. The amendment is adopted. Any other questions, members? Senator Wigger.
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. The mission, healthy eating, promoting physical activity, looking at K-12, but as you know, we invest a growing amount of dollars in early education, and these are traits for healthy eating exercise that are best learned early on. Recognizing that, I'm wondering if we might include in the report what we're doing with public dollars as it addresses exercise. And you know, I get it in terms of the argument that you're going to increase student achievement, but thought maybe we could go before K, and ECFE, for example, has a number of items that relate to physical activity as well. So perhaps a comment from the author or testifiers. I don't have language, but could easily do that.
Thank you, Senator Ken. And you know you're going to Senator Wigger's committee, so you can probably work something out together.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Wigger. I definitely believe, and I should point out, you have in your packets the Coalition of the Minnesotans for Healthy Kids, who represent the group who have worked long and hard with the Department of Education in crafting the bill that we have in front of us. I do not imagine that there would be any resistance to looking at these same programs prior to kindergarten. It just becomes a function of the department's ability to do this and costs. There will be a very small fiscal note that will end up being attached to this. We're working on that. That might make that a little more complicated, but I certainly think the intent would be embraced.
Thank you, Senator. Any other questions? Senator Clausen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering what your ultimate outcome would be. Is this an expectation of the Department of Education then to give recommendations for changes? We're collecting a lot of information. I'm not sure what the outcome then would be.
Senator Kent.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Clausen. At this point, it really is an assessment. We made a change 3 years ago in statute, and we want to see how that's being implemented. And then with that information, I think that then it would be a time to look at it and figure out how do we proceed. I'm wondering if Mr. Allwell might have any.
Yes, I know that the Madam Chair and Senator Clausen, I know that the Minnesota Department of Education is working on benchmarks or outcomes for physical education, which previously did not exist, and the standards brought in the need for that. And so this would be a situation where we would be able to get an assessment of what is going on in the state and then prepare to implement benchmarks either in a graduated sense or in a K through 12.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other questions, members? If not, Senator Ken moves that Senate File 2207 be recommended to pass and be referred to Finance. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say no. The bill is adopted. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
And we have Senator Dahl, who is running over here But we have several testifiers who are in the agenda for his bill, and I would like to make sure we have about 35 minutes to go over his bill. So with the members' indulgence, I would like to invite some of the members. You are very familiar with Senate File 530. I believe that you have Senator Dahl. Thank you. I know that you have multiple testifiers and you're presenting another bill, so feel free. You know, I will continue to call testifiers if you need to to leave the room for a few minutes. I think the members will be okay so long as we have people who are able to respond to the members' questions. So if you could just start the process for us and make sure, members, we would like to hear from all of you. We have about 11 people who have signed up for testify. I don't know if there will be more. So I would very much appreciate some brief comments since we are familiar with the issue. And Senator Dahl, if you
Thank you,
proceed.
Madam Chair. Members, I do believe we have the A2 amendment, if we could
That is correct.
Move that.
Members,
move that.
You have the A2, which is a delete all amendment. It's an author amendment. All of those in favor of the A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say no. The A2 amendment is adopted.
All right. Let me just give you a little overview, and then I will turn it over to our testifiers. The purpose of Senate File 530 is to convey the Crosswinds Art Science Integration Magnet School to the Purpich Center for Arts Education and then give the Purpich Center access to specific K-12 education funding categories in order to manage the school for the year 2014-15 and beyond. Members, we do have a local consortium of school districts which make up the East Metro Integration District, also known as EMID, which unanimously offers this proposal. EMID currently owns the school building that was built with state general obligation bonds and has been running a year-round grade 6 through 10 art science integration school. EMID believes that the school and its sister school, Harambee, should continue. EMID put out an RFP for the building and the school operations, and they selected the Purpich Center. As they have already demonstrated this school year under a temporary management agreement, this state agency has the capacity and capability to run the program, grow it for the benefit of the EMID schools, and take best practices from this school to share throughout the state. I think what we're going to do is have Bjorn, is that right? We're going to have you walk through the A2 amendment at this time? I think he was aware of that.
Madam Chair and members, so I'll walk through the summary of the A2 author's amendment. There is also a very brief bill summary in your packets, so if it's more convenient for you to refer to one or both of those documents, welcome you to do that. So sections one and two of the amendment grant the Purpich Board the powers necessary to care and manage and operate the Crosswind School and authorizes the board to establish and operate an inter-district integration magnet program. Section 3, beginning on page 3 of the amendment, offers definitions applicable to the chapter of law in which the rest of the Purpich statutes are written. Section 3 also, beginning in subdivision 2, again authorizes the board to operate the Crosswind School and further specifies that a student who is a resident in another Minnesota school district may apply to the Crosswind School under the under the enrollment options program, commonly known as open enrollment. Subdivision 3 specifies how students enrolled at the Crosswind School generate general education revenue. I will note, just for the members' information, that this language here, though it looks complicated, is almost identical to the language written in the charter school law, with the exception of the two lines on 3.31 and 3.32. These two lines, through the author's intent, are included here to ensure that this bill has a neutral fiscal note. Subdivision 4, beginning on page 4, specifies that special education is paid to Crosswind School and adjusted for non-resident or open enrolling students in the sort of standard way. Section 3, subdivision 5, specifies that the board, meaning the Purpich Board, may transport pupils enrolled in the current year, the year we're in now, to and from the Crosswind School in succeeding years. So any student enrolled at Crosswinds presently would be eligible for transportation until they are no longer a Crosswinds School student. Further, pupil transportation expenses under this section are reimbursable under 124D.87, which is the section of law which authorizes the state to reimburse districts for the costs of inter-district transportation related to achievement and integration purposes. Section 3, subdivision 6, provides that this Crosswind School is eligible to receive achievement and integration aid. Section 3, subdivision 7, again, this language is similar to language that you would see in the section of law governing charter schools. It just ensures that the Crosswind School is eligible to receive other aids and grants, and beginning in paragraph B of subdivision 7, clarifies that if a levy would be required to obtain the money, the Crosswind School doesn't receive aid in those categories of revenue. Subdivision 8 authorizes Crosswind School to operate as a year-round flexible learning year program. Subdivision 9 requires the Commissioner of Education to require the Crosswind School to follow the sort of standard budget accounting and pupil accounting procedures in force for other charter schools and school districts. And the last section, titled on the bottom of page 4 and continuing on page 5, is a section of session law which in subdivision 1 conveys the Crosswind School facility to Purpich Center for the Arts Education for use as an East Metropolitan Area Integration Magnet School. Subdivision 2 indicates that any student enrolled in the Crosswind School during the current year can continue to enroll there in subsequent years, and again references the open enrollment statutes. Subdivision 3 is a sort of technical clarification for the purposes of calculating pupil counts for compensatory revenue, literacy aid, and alternative compensation revenue. This subdivision directs the department to look into the past to October 1st, 2001, 2013 enrollment counts at that site. It's a very standard thing when you have a new district forming, you look at the sort of component districts in the previous year. And lastly, subdivision 4 directs the Department of Education to the extent possible to qualify the Crosswind School for Title I and other federal funding. With regard to the effective dates, Sections 1, 2, and 4 are effective the day following final enactment, and Section 3 is effective beginning on the first day of the new fiscal year, the new school year, July 1st, 2014.
Thank you. Members and Senator Dahl, as you can tell, this provision, this significant piece of legislation, really is more tied to the funding related to the school and the future of the school. I decided to hear this bill in this committee because I believe that we need to provide a voice for a significant number of constituencies who care very deeply about these children, and I think that you need to hear their perspectives and need to hear their concerns about these children. I would like to hear that. I think the members need to hear that. The public needs to hear that. Having said that, I want to make absolutely clear that this is unprecedented. It is a significant issue in a context of how we could make a decision that will be made in Senator Wigger's committee with respect to what happened with a school and a request from a school to go to a state agency that we fund and the responsibility for the future of that school as well as the state agency. So this is an issue that has been vetted. I think all of you have been approached, but it's clear that most of the bill that is in front of you really relates to financial issues and the future of this important school. So I want you to keep that in mind and also ask the testifiers to please be as brief as you can, because most of the conversation actually around what will happen with the future of the school and the financial changes that you are requiring to make to both the Purpich Center as well as Crosswings is really important to the state of Minnesota. We have a future obligation if we create this new model and set a precedent, which is incredibly important for education in Minnesota. We haven't done this before. So it's incredibly important that we pay attention to this, and would like to ask for brief testimony today. Senator, if you could go ahead and let us know who's coming
yes,
first.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate the time and the opportunity for them to share their story, and you are correct on our obligation. I think it's a risk worth taking. I'm going to introduce these two speakers, and I'll allow the others to fill in as their space. I probably will run across the hall and come back.
Yes.
Thanks for indulging me on that. First, I'm going to introduce Dr. Gina Lubke. She's the Executive Director of the East Metro Education District. She'll be followed by Kitty Goggins, a school board member.
Thanks. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and the members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you about EMID and our desire to convey our schools. My name is Jean Lubke. I am the Executive Director of EMID, and I also have handouts on the district for the committee. The East Metro Integration District, District Number 6067, known as EMID, is a collaborative integration district with 10 member districts: Forest Lake, Invergrove Heights, Roseville, South St. Paul, St. Paul, South Washington County, Spring Lake Park, Stillwater, West St. Paul, Mendota Heights, Eagan, and White Bear Lake. EMID assists our member districts in achieving educational excellence and racial and economic equity through regional leadership, collaboration, and mutual support. We collaborate to create efficiencies and eliminate duplicative programs and services. We provide professional development, student programming, and consultative services for our districts, which then support their district achievement and integration goals. EMID was originally formed in the mid-1990s as the Tri-District with St. Paul, Roseville, and North St. Paul, Maplewood, Oakdale. And at that time, St. Paul was our only racially isolated district, and the racial makeup within the other districts was substantially different than it is today. Today, all three of the original districts are racially isolated, although North St. Paul is no longer part of the collaborative. And White Bear Lake and West St. Paul both have racially identifiable schools. The racial diversity in the member districts have increased greatly in the past 15 years. And for nearly those 15 years, EMID has operated two integration schools: Harumbe Community Cultures Environmental Science School, formerly called the Tri-District Elementary, a K-5 year-round school in Maplewood, and the Crosswinds Art and Science School, a 6th through 8th grade year-round school in Woodbury. Schools are in buildings that were bonded by the state for the purpose of integration. These are magnet schools that voluntarily draw students from all of our member districts for the purpose of having an educational experience in an integrated setting. Harumbe Elementary, which opened in the mid-90s, has historically served about 425 students. Crosswinds Middle, which opened in the fall of 2001 with 174 students, grew to 530 students. Due to last year's uncertainty, the current enrollment is back to the original 174, However, with a known future, that's certain to grow again. Half of the students in both schools have come from St. Paul, and the remainder have come from the other member districts and non-member districts. Schools and the experiences have been very valuable for the thousands of students and their families, as well as the staff who have been part of the Crosswinds and Harambe families over the years. While the schools served their purpose of providing an integrated learning experience for the students and staff in the schools, there was not the infrastructure established to share that learning and impact back within the schools of the 10 member districts. And while the schools were clearly benefiting those who were directly participating, the amount of time and resources needed to run the schools diminished the time and resources that the small EMID staff and Joint Powers Board could spend on integration efforts within the member districts to help them increase equity. Therefore, in the winter of 2013, EMID Board decided to move away from the business of running the schools and to find districts which were willing and able to continue the schools. Roseville and Purpich emerged as districts which were willing to continue the running of Harambe and Crosswinds as multi-district integration schools. The Purpich Center was particularly qualified to continue the arts focus for Crosswinds. No other districts were willing to continue the school programming, although others were interested in obtaining the buildings for other purposes. With the new focus on achievement in the achievement and integration legislation, the member districts believe that EMID will best meet their needs by direct service to the districts rather than by running schools. As a collaborative, we are having cross-district professional development and leadership discussions about the barriers to achievement. We are collaboratively identifying the measurements to determine the impact of integration work within our districts. We are collaboratively beginning a process to create a solid pipeline for getting students and adults of color into the classroom. Together, we share our best practices. This year, we are focused on sharing best practices in early learning, college and career readiness, family engagement, and equity and cultural competence. We are working to define the new EMID. We strongly believe that an integrated education experience is an important option for students to have. Harambe and Crosswinds both are uniquely serving the needs of the students attending. They are wonderful capital assets for the state in extraordinary environmental settings, and the schools offer wonderful experiential education in the arts and environment in an integrated setting for the students. However, running and managing the schools isn't in the best use of EMID's resources if the goal is to close the achievement gap for all East Metro students. Roseville Public Schools and the Purpich Center are managing the two schools this year and are showing that they have the interest and capability to grow and sustain these schools for the students in the East Metro area. The EMID Board unanimously passed the legislative platform you have in front of you in November 2013, supporting their continued operation and conveyance of Harambe to Roseville and of Crosswinds to the Purpich Center. We ask that the legislation to convey these schools to these districts be approved so the students may continue to have their integrated experience and that the EMID districts may move forward to collaborate on our achievement and equity work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Over to
Madam Chair and Education Committee members, my name is Kitty Goggins. I am the current chair of the East Metro Integration District School Board. I serve as the Roseville representative to the board. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you about the EMID Board's desire to convey the schools. The EMID Board, which includes a representative from each of our 10 member districts, unanimously supports conveyance of the schools. We reached this position after expansive analysis of the situation. We've had to balance the needs of the students who selected to attend EMID schools with the needs of all students attending member districts. The process began with strategic planning work in 2011. By 2011, there were a significant number of students of colors in most member districts, requiring increasing resources to fund equity work within member districts' own schools. The EMID board concluded it was critical to maximize member districts' ability to close the achievement gap and provide an equitable learning environment, an opportunity for all 110,000 students across our member districts. This called for shifting resources toward member districts and away from operating the two EMID schools, which consumed a significant amount of integration dollars sent to EMID by members on top of per pupil revenue, and also a majority of staff and board time. That fall, the board discussed closing the schools. After listening to extensive and passionate testimony from students, parents, past graduates, and staff on the value of the true integration achieved at the EMID schools, and hearing a proposal for operating the schools without using integration dollars, the board voted to keep the schools open. But despite aggressively trimming budgets and exploring other funding, it became clear that the schools were not financially sustainable for EMID to operate and continued to consume the majority of staff and board time. In the fall of 2012, the board sought another entity to take over operation. As Dr. Lupke explained, Roseville Area Schools and Purpet Center for the Arts have been performing well in operating the schools this year under contract to EMID. Roseville and Purpose have each brought important expertise, efficiencies, and other assets that enable them to sustain long-term the unique equitable educational experience Crosswinds and Harambe provide. The EMID Board, with representatives from all 10 districts, unanimously asked that the legislation to convey these schools be approved so that students may continue their integrated experience and that the EMID districts may accelerate moving forward to collaborate on our achievement and equity work to benefit all 110,000 students in our member districts.
Thank you very much. Senator Kent, do you mind if we take questions? We have several people.
Yeah.
We can call the testifiers back to the...
I just had a very quick question because I may have missed something. If I can just ask a very quick question from Dr. Lupke's testimony that she may not have to come back.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to make sure, you had said that the school was 6th through 8th grade, but it's now 6th through 10th grade. Isn't that correct?
Madam Chair, it's 6th, 10th.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Just wanted to clarify. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to call Ms. Maker, Ms. Larson, and Ms. Ciccone to the table, please. Welcome to the committee.
Thank
please
you.
Proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate staff. My name is Sue Mackert, and I'm Executive Director of the Purpet Center for Arts Education. I, too, encourage support of Senate File 530 so that we may protect and maximize the use of this valuable state asset. When Purpet Center for Arts Education was asked to take over Crosswinds Arts and Science School, we did what any management team would do. We conducted a comprehensive analysis to determine the plausibility and the appropriateness for this state agency's involvement. As a result of that research, the Finance Committee and the Purpet Center Board of Directors instructed management to move forward and work with legislators and EMID for obtaining conveyance of Crosswinds Arts and Science School. With assistance from MDE, MMB, and the Minnesota Department of Administration, the state entered into an operational agreement with EMID in August for Purpet Center to operate Crosswinds this current school year while seeking conveyance this legislative session. Crosswinds has 39 stellar employees, and school opened September 3rd with an enrollment, as Dr. Lupke indicated, of 174 6th through 10th grade students, and we are on track to reach a projected enrollment growth, our goal, of 50 new students this fall. Current parents appreciate the integrated learning environment at Crosswinds, and word of mouth continues to prompt daily calls for this innovative year-round school. There are many stories of Crosswinds students who were failing in their home schools, who are now eager to go to school each day and doing their best, and they are learning. This does not imply that schools in their home districts are not effective. It simply means that the needs of these children were not being met in a manner that kept them engaged or challenged in school. Crosswind's student makeup today is 60% students of color, 58% free and reduced meals, and 30% special ed. That is why our focus is on creating an integrated, culturally rich learning community with high expectations of students, teachers, and staff. For more than 25 years, Purpose Center has helped schools develop and implement programs based on research and best practices to meet the individual needs of their school communities. We have worked with elementary, middle, secondary, and high schools in every area of the state, rural, urban, and suburban. And I checked our records. We've worked with schools in every one of your districts as well. And I'm proud of that. We've handled everything from financial management to demographic shifts to teacher recruitment to standards and assessment and full curriculum development. Our years of experience in helping schools increase student learning and deepen engagement allow us great optimism for long-term sustainability of Crosswinds. Thank you. I would now, Madam Chair, if I may, ask Susan Mao Larson, who is a member of the Board of Directors of the Purpose Center for Arts Education, to offer some thoughts.
Thank you, Ms. Mackert. Just a clarification, did you say you have 39 employees and 164 students?
Yes. Yes.
That's a ratio of 4 employees per student. Thank you. Ms. Larson.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Susan Mao Larson, and I am a member of the Purpose Center for the Board of the Purpose Center for Arts. I just want to say, Senator Torres Ray, I think you said 164 students just now, and it's actually 174, if I heard you correctly.
Thank you.
But I want to first thank you for hearing this bill and encourage you to support Senate File 530. As you've heard, Purpose Center for the Arts has successfully managed Crosswinds for this school year. I'm very excited about what I've seen happen in the school, and I'm excited about the potential that we have to build upon that success in the future and manage the school going forward as a model integration program that provides a solid education grounded in the arts and science. My interest in Crosswinds starts with personal experiences. Both of my sons attended Crosswinds from grade 6 through 10. One of them went on to attend the Purpose Arts High School, and the other one is currently a PSEO student. Through the years, I have had the pleasure of watching numerous students gain from this program, gain pride and confidence in who they are, excel academically, and be prepared for successful futures in our increasingly diverse communities, and many of them are sitting here today. As you know, a few years ago, EMID made the decision to refocus their efforts and resources towards all the member districts. And they looked for somebody to take over Crosswinds because they saw value in the program and wanted to make sure that it continued. And that's where Purpich came in. This is a perfect fit. Purpich brings expertise in arts education, integrated programs, and professional development. And proof of this is what's happening in Crosswinds today. I know you're busy. You guys are really busy. This is a tight session. But really, if you have a few minutes, I would encourage you to drive down to Woodbury and take a few minutes to tour Crosswinds. I think you'll be impressed by what you'll see. Passing Senate File 530 is important. It's important for our state. It's consistent with the state integration laws that were reinforced last year. It will allow Purpose to continue this program and to serve as a lab school for teacher training and professional development. You're going to hear testimony from some parents and students, and some of those students have graduated from Crosswinds. But as you listen to them, I just ask you really to think about the future students, the ones who are coming up that need this program. And I ask you to pass Senate File 530 so that this is available for those kids as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. Could you remind us of the number of employees you have in Purpich and the number of students currently? I want to kind of compare the ratio.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, you asked the number of?
Number of employees and then number of students.
At the Purpich Center?
Yeah.
We have about 274 students, and keep in mind, too, that it's not just a school. And we have about 80 employees.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Providing statewide services.
Thank you. Ms. Ciccone, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mary Ciccone, Parents United. We're very supportive of the unique role PERPICH has played in the arts and science integration education for students across the state. Their work literally has touched kids from Bemidji to Albert Lea. We support PERPICH's request for conveyance of crosswinds in the passage of this bill. We believe will provide families who wish to take part in this learning stability, and knowing that the school will be there in the future and that the school will be a model for other schools. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ciccone. We appreciate your input here. Next in the agenda, we have Mr. Celeste and Mike, who is the parent of two children, and I am not going to attempt to say your last name. You're just going to come.
I think you also have Nate Celeste on there with me.
I do not. It's so we have, oh, yes, we have Eric and Nate Celeste. If you could please come to. So we have a group of parents and children. If you could please approach the table, that would be great.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Eric Celeste, and thank you and the members for this opportunity to testify on Senate File 530. I am the proud dad of two sons, both of whom are with me today. Nathaniel will testify himself. My older son, Alex, has special needs and benefited from the integrated program at Crosswinds because the same skills that it teaches students to learn about themselves, share that with each other, respect each other, the same environment that generates a lunchroom where kids of every culture mix together, don't just sit in their own corners, welcomed my son, who had special needs and accommodations, to really become part of that community and form friendships. And he's now graduating this year from St. John's University, due to the boost that Crosswinds gave him. And Nate will speak himself about the program and what it's done for him. I'd say for both of them, I heard a question about the grade levels from 6 to 10, that's been a very powerful and important part of the program at Crosswinds, that students in the 9th and 10th grade get to mentor the younger students and be leaders in their school and are very well prepared then in order to make choices at 11th grade that lead them on to success beyond that. So that age span has been special and has been part of the International Baccalaureate program there as well. I'm also representing EMID families, a group of families who for the last 4 years have worked hard on seeing these schools succeed. And I just want to mention, as Ms. Goggins said, there's been hours and hours of testimony from the community to the EMID board and to the legislature last year on this matter. And every community member who's testified has supported the program and been positive about the program. PERPICH is a model for the state. It can create a sustainable program at Crosswinds that will give families confidence and allow the program to grow again. The state has made a $26 million investment in this building and the purpose of intentional integration that Crosswinds represents. And the EMID board has unanimously asked that program continue under the leadership of PERPICH. And we ask you to please support this Senate File 530 to do this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Celeste. Welcome to the committee.
Hi. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I speak to you today as a concerned former Crosswinds student. I was in the EMID schools kindergarten through 10th grade, and now in my junior year I'm taking one class at Central High School and the rest of my classes at Concordia University through the state's PSEO program. I can't say I really understood the importance of the integration work that Crosswinds was doing while I was there, but coming out of that school and being at schools where they haven't had the same integration work going in, I can tell that it's important. None of my new friends at Central or Concordia are nearly as comfortable talking about issues surrounding race as I am. And I think that in today's ever-increasingly global world, that's something that people need to be good at doing. If they want to succeed both socially and economically in the world, they have to be able to talk about issues of race. And that's something that Crosswinds has really helped me be comfortable with, and I think can help other people be comfortable with. And that's why I think that Crosswinds needs to be preserved. And Purpage is the perfect place to do that. But it needs to be preserved because future students need this. Future generations of Minnesota kids need this. And if they don't have that, I don't see them being able to succeed as well.
Nate, I'm going to take you with me everywhere I go so that you can tell this story to those individuals who disagree. I think that you have a clear understanding of what our global economy is all about, and I wish you the best of success because I think you're right on. Thank you for coming to share that perspective with us.
Thank you.
Please proceed. Hi,
yep. I'm Mike Bogoszewski, and I am a parent of two kids who are, I guess you could say, dual eligibles for this process because both of them are alums of both Crosswinds and Purpage. Our son, who's here tonight, he's a young man now, 22, and then our daughter, who is currently a junior at Purpage and an alum of Crosswinds. I started out with EMID very involved in the site-based council there over a decade ago, and just as a very involved parent have stayed with the program ever since. And it's a group of very dedicated, committed parents. You know, why do we care and why are we here over even this most recent three-year battle, I guess, what makes it important? Quite frankly, it's because this is not simply one of many neighborhood schools. If it were that, then there's all kinds of different absorptions that can happen. But it is a unique setting and unique place. And, you know, let's be obvious and open about it. It is different, not only because of the year-round calendar, not only because of the arts magnet focus, but frankly because it does have a culture that values and succeeds at true integration, as opposed to many places where they have a diverse student body, but they're just diverse and not really integrated and culturally aware and sensitive and act as one. As such, Crosswinds really has been the option for students and families like us who have chosen voluntarily to have our kids' educational experiences be within that culture. And it's been a school, as some could testify or as in many of the written testimonies that you'll have, where those children who are different from the majority can be and feel safe to thrive. Whether that difference is rooted in something like skin color or ethnic origin or language spoken at home or something perhaps less visible rooted in a girl or boy who has chosen to center their life around the dance or drawing or choir. And I think that's why many of us were so excited when Purpage did step forward to want to be the steward of Crosswinds. Because Purpich is also different. It's a place that itself is a unique setting and centered around being a safe place for kids who thrive from all walks of life and every ethnicity, every color, every language that exists across the state of Minnesota from all 8 congressional districts. So they know how to do that. They know how to make it work. As someone alluded to earlier, I believe that this last year, with all the uncertainty, the enrollment was less than we'd wanted. But in the past, it had never been a problem. And if anything, I think Executive Director Mackert and her staff know how to attract kids and sustain that as we go into the future. It is unprecedented. I think if it weren't unprecedented, as Chair Torres Gray mentioned, we wouldn't be talking about it in a conference room with the Minnesota Senate. But just as Purpich was unprecedented when it came into existence, and I think is, if not unique, very rare, even nationally, is a model of a place where these kids cohort who need it, both the current ones and the future ones, that doesn't exist anywhere else. It is the only option for many families. It has been. And I think if we care about keeping that option for parents and families in the East Metro, Purpich is really not just a choice. It's the only one that will work and will succeed and enable that to happen. So as a parent of kids who have been through both and someone who's just extremely aware through my own observation of that cultural fit between the two and Purpich's ability to maintain this and make it sustainable in the future, I also urge passage of this and allowance of the conveyance to Purpich. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Thank you for being active and just persistent on this issue. We really appreciate what the parents and the families have been doing. Next, we have the Taylors, Leslie Taylor and Carl Taylor, and Laurel LeBlanc. You could please join the table. Welcome to the committee.
A picture of our school.
Thanks.
Madam Chair, members of the Senate committee, and all gathered, my name's Leslie Taylor, and I'm here with my daughter, Kaili. I'm a current parent at Crosswinds, and she's a ninth grade student. She will speak for herself, and I'm just going to say a few words because of our time here. Just want to urge you to vote and support Senate File 530, because I, as a parent stakeholder, have been working with the Purpage and Crosswind staff this year, and they've done a great job as far as continuing to maintain this model of experiential integration. We live an integrated life experience daily because of our heritages, internal and external, and as well our learning styles. This mirrored the school environment that we chose for our daughter as we sought out and found the best school setting in which we could thrive as a family through our child's educational model, academically and socially. The school community has allowed our children to experience true integration through artistic and scientific application. It has become the very fabric of the child that is moving responsibly as an active participant in this society. They will not have to learn this as a concept when they grow up. It is the way they are growing, through a school called Crosswinds in our midst. The Crosswinds model has engaged community through integration. This is one of our accomplishments in which we can take pride in the state of Minnesota. So I urge you to pass Senate File 530.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Hello. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Senators and all gathered. Thank you for welcoming me to testify today. My name is Kaili Taylor. I am in ninth grade and have attended Crosswinds for 4 years. Crosswinds has been a second home, a place where I can feel safe for the past 4 years. I've had some of the best experience with teachers. The teachers at Crosswinds aren't just there to teach you. Many of them have become a close friend, or as the students like to call, a second mom or dad. They try to connect with you, help you, listen, and get to know your learning style. If a teacher sees you having a hard time with anything, they will take the time out of their personal day to come over and individually help you. All of the teachers push you to be a risk taker and to succeed at what you're doing. Over the 4 years, I've watched Crosswinds change. Teachers, friends, other students leave, but the one thing that has never changed was the care and kindness from the teachers to every student. I've recently come back from a break and realized how much I have not remembered. I can't imagine what I would be able to remember if I had off of school for 3 months. Going all year is a great idea. You retain a lot of what you learn, and the teachers make it fun in the summer, giving us time outside to work on projects, anything to make it more interesting, fun for us. Having school all year gives us a great opportunity to do big musical play productions, a fine arts night where orchestra, band, and visual arts have the opportunity to perform and showcase what they learned. I hope for Crosswinds to stay open for many years to come so that other students get the experience of what I was able to.
Kaili, thank you so much. Tell us about what grade are you in and what are the plans for the future?
I am in ninth grade, and if Crosswinds continues to stay open, I would like to finish my graduation there.
Fantastic. We're very happy that you're here sharing this testimony. It's very important. Thanks. Please proceed.
Hi, my name is Laura LeBlanc, and I am just reading the testimony of my daughter, Abby, who is a 10th grader. She loves her school so much that she peers in the window during the summer, her 1 month off. And she decided that she just could not possibly miss 4 hours of school today, so I'm reading her testimony.
Thank you.
My name is Abby LeBlanc. I'm in my fifth and final year at Crosswinds, and I'm fully able to say that I wouldn't trade these 5 years for anything in the world. I've learned so much about academics and life in general, and about working together in an integrated community where I have friends from every different race, culture, and background. Many schools are diverse, but may need to learn a little bit more about being integrated to the standard that Crosswinds is. I've also learned to have an open mind. I go into situations where I may agree or disagree with what's being said and can come out on a positive note with the knowledge that my opinions are being respected as well. Her next paragraph is about, it starts out, music at Crosswinds has also changed my life. I'm not going to read it all, but basically they put a violin in her hands and she took off. As a parent, I'm excited. She got a 7 in science, which is the highest grade this quarter, and a 7 in math, first time in her whole life. The 6th through 10th grade system may seem strange, but it has given me focus. I have researched and chosen to attend a public high school next year because of their phenomenal orchestra program and continue to excel. The world needs more places like Crosswinds, where students can have the opportunity to experience education in a place where you can be yourself and feel accepted. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. LeBlanc. Congratulations. I think that you know, her excitement and her performance speaks to really how great this school has been, and we really hope to have those experiences, those positive experiences for all of our kids. So thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
Next, we have Mr. Larson and Ms. Bainey. And I, members, would like to hear from the department. I would like to kind of hear their position on this issue as well.
Madam Chair.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Daniel Larson, and as a parent of both former Crosswinds and Purpitt students and a high school English teacher, I feel I am uniquely qualified to share my perspective on Senate File 530 and share my enthusiasm for its possibilities. To say that these two schools have saved my son's life is not hyperbole. He was the child in the neighborhood that kids would run away from when they saw him coming. He was described as socially awkward, quirky, odd, and different, the same words you read or hear in the news describing young men doing unimaginable things. He was labeled with a behavioral disorder and required to have a full-time special ed aide. Our darkest day as a family was when school officials informed us his teacher did not feel safe around him, and parents had complained about our family's involvement in karate. As a result, we were asked to supply our own mode of transportation to church activities because parents were concerned for their children's safety. This was deeply hurtful, as karate is an important part of our family's Japanese heritage and culture. We came to Crosswinds as our last hope. At the end of his sixth grade year, Crosswinds made the recommendation that he no longer needed special ed services because he did not exhibit the behaviors documented in our home district. I believe the culture, the integrated arts and science curriculum, and the highly skilled staff had worked a miracle. However, 8 years later, I realize it was no miracle, as we are one of many families at Crosswinds with this type of story. After finishing Crosswinds, he went to Purpitt Arts High School. There he received an academic and art instruction that is unparalleled, made friends, and flourished. He is now a freshman at the Maryland Institute College of Art and recently called asking why he was on the dean's list. He was relieved and commented that being on someone's list is usually not a good thing. As you can see, Crosswinds and Purpitt have changed his life, and I will be eternally grateful. Crosswinds has a unique culture of integration and inclusion. Students are a blend of backgrounds engaged in authentic relationships that have been guided into one cohesive family by a focused mission and an outstanding staff. These two schools are a haven for kids that are unique and creative. I encourage this committee to do what is best for these children and vote to continue Crosswinds culture and mission by voting yes to Senate File 530. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Larson.
Please proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair, and or afternoon, sorry, committee members. My name is Tammy Bain Kaczmarski. I'm the parent of a 2013 Crosswinds graduate. My daughter attended the school from 7th through 10th grade. And for the record, if Crosswinds went to 12th grade, she would still be there. I thank you for this opportunity. I come before you in support of Senate File 530, the transference of governance of Crosswinds Arts and Science School to the Purpich Center for Arts Education. My daughter ended up at Crosswinds because you always have to have a plan B when you're basically provided with a school choice lottery roulette wheel system. It was not our lucky spin that year for the St. Paul School District Choice A. We got choice B. Knowing the way the odds were, a registration was also simultaneously sent for Crosswinds. And after registering in St. Paul and then touring Crosswinds, the hands-down choice was Crosswinds for our family and for my daughter. My daughter grew to love the school for the year-round calendar, and that's despite the fact that she competitively dances. And the longer school year calendar means that during recital time and national competition, she was still in school while others were out. The later start time, the arts offered, band, theater, and the active full campus science program, the welcoming environment, the staff, and the wonderful building and campus. And it's a school not designed like a prison. If one views this building from the freeway, you most likely would not automatically state, oh, that's just another school. Clue number one as to how well thought out this integration design was. Keep in mind that for arts, she sacrificed going to a school that offered soccer, swimming, tennis, volleyball. Those are all four sports that she had a natural ability in. I, as a parent, grew to love Crosswinds because it is a well-oiled machine, as I call it. And that's despite board neglect, despite all the transitions it has gone through since the doors initially opened, despite member districts using it as a dumping ground for students in need of large services, despite funding being cut or withheld. It has shown that despite all the obstacles, there are staff, students, and parents dedicated enough to continue pushing forward to ensure in East Metro that an evolving award-winning integration model continues to thrive despite all that it's thrown its way. My goal in sending my children to school is that they be afforded a safe environment to learn and thrive. The integration piece was lacking in the schools I attended in the 70s and 80s on the east side of St. Paul, as busing was seen as a solution to race balancing. I, as a social worker, have experience working within the very school system my children attend and know and have experience working within within the integration model in the East Metro. My two children are biracial and have gone different avenues. Both have gifted abilities. For safety reasons, better opportunities, my son has attended a school outside of our district for the last 3 years. Oscar Hammerstein wrote the show tune, You've Got to Be Carefully Taught, for the 1949 musical South Pacific. South Pacific received scrutiny for its commentary regarding relationships between different races and ethnic groups. In this day and age, it is a sad moment to attend a conference where teen panel members point out the silos of segregation in their schools and how crossing those lines brings questions amongst those in your silos, or you've been punched because you're just different. It is sad to think that in this day and age that a state that prides itself in forward thinking, preparing the future leaders, would let opportunity continue the legacy in teaching a strong integration model thought up by some of the most prolific forward thinkers not continue to grow and thrive. We have a chance to keep the integration process moving forward. We no longer want to imagine what wonderful things will evolve once the transference of governance is granted to Purpage Center for the Arts. Let Crosswinds, with Purpage's governance, be the state of Minnesota's next thriving integration lab for grades 6 through 10. I ask that you say yes to the integration by providing support in moving this bill forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Members, this concludes the list of individuals who have signed up for testimony, and so I'm going to proceed to ask a few questions, and then I'm going to bring the department just to provide a statement. So, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to comment and really applaud all the organizations that have worked so hard on this. I know it's been a long process, but what we see here, I think, is really an example of what is great for kids, and putting kids first and their achievement and their well-being. And so I just really applaud both EMID, Sue Mackert, the Purpage Center, for working so diligently on this. And I'll be glad to offer my support, of course.
Thank you, Senator. Any other comments or questions from members? And again, members, you know that this policy is really with respect to the funding, the future funding of both this particular school and also the Purpage. So most of the questions that, related to the future of the school and how the Purpage will handle the future of the school and how the state will be responsible for that will be heard in committee with Senator Wigger. Senator Kent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was wondering if I could confirm something with Dr. Lubke. She's still here.
If you could please come to the microphone.
Thank
Senator
you.
Kent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Lubke, I just wanted to double check again. So Harambe, you said, had 450 students?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what is the capacity of that building?
Of Harambe?
For students. Mm-hmm.
It is about 450. It is at capacity.
Okay.
Around 450.
Thank you. And what is the capacity for Crosswinds?
If you could come to the table. You need to identify yourself for the tape.
Excuse me.
Thank you very much.
My name is Sherry Thompson. I'm currently the business manager for the Roseville Area School District. However, I had served as the business manager for the East Metro Integration District from 2003 through 2013.
Thank you, Ms. Thompson. Senator Kent, could you please repeat your question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Thompson, the capacity for the Crosswinds building?
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Kent, and committee members, the capacity for that building is about 600 students.
Thank you. And if I may ask just a couple more straightforward questions like this. Dr. Lubke, you had said that the attendance was 530, but in my understanding, that was several years ago that it reached that level, I believe. Do you know what year it had reached that? Perhaps Ms. Thompson knows that answer.
That was actually in the 2008 school year.
Okay. Thank you. And so, and understanding that the uncertainty of this past year has made that very much an exception, so I just kind of want to leave that aside. But my understanding was that really over about the past, say, 4 or 5 years, it had been more around 350-ish. Is that correct?
Actually, it had been over 400. We were at about 530, and probably over the last three school years, there was discussion about the future of the schools or the role of the schools within the collaborative is when we began to see that enrollment drop a little bit. Our lowest point was, in fact, the 2012-13 school year, and that was about 352.
Thank you. And if I may...
Senator Kent.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Please proceed.
Did Harambe experience a similar decline in that same time frame?
Harambe did not.
Okay. And thank you. And that is part of what I'm trying to understand. I very much appreciate the vision that Purpich has described and articulated for the future of this school. But I have continued to be concerned when we listen to these incredibly touching stories of how effective and how important Crosswinds has been for so many students. I have to wonder if part of it was because it has been very small. I mean, at some point it was about 70 students per grade. And I know we would all love our students to have schools that are about 70 students per grade. And so as we think through the vision of Purpich for this school, my concern is, as it grows, because that's the point, we are going to want it to grow, will it continue to still be everything that has been so special for Crosswinds, families, and students as it changes? And so that is a question, I think, from a policy perspective, that has been something that I have wondered about and just want to – and I don't know if somebody wants
you,
to address
Senator
it.
But Kent.
Thank you.
I think that's the most important point, actually. So clearly we had an opportunity last year to review these numbers. We have asked questions about, you know, the actual capacity and the responsibility that we, if we pass this bill, will be handing on to Purpich. So it is clear, members, for those of us who are in the Finance Committee, that this is a key question that we need to ask as we proceed to approve or disapprove of these. The question for us is, do we have the necessary funding to continue the program as is, knowing that it's not up to capacity? In fact, we have 175 students right now for a building that has a capacity for 600. So this is a key question for all of us who really support this idea, knowing that we need to come up with the dollars to support and sustain the program in a way that works for the parents that will be part of the quality of the program, as you had just heard from the parents, is what we value. And so it will be tragic for us to really move into making a decision that really puts this program in a different place, where we talk about, you know, the opposite. So this is a very important point that will be heard in finance, clearly for those of us on that committee, is the core question we need to answer. So I have 5 minutes to end this, or we will have to come back tonight. So it is incredibly important that members, you know, give me a sense of what they want to do. You're going to hear this again in very in much more detail for funding in Senator Wigger's committee. You're welcome to talk about this now for the last 4 minutes we have. But if there is any compelling issue, if it is not related to finance, I encourage you to either pass those questions to the members of the Finance Committee. I would love to hear the position of the department before we end committee. Members, any other questions related to this? Senator Clausen? Oh, no? Okay. You want to hear from the department? Senator
yes.
Clausen?
Madam Chair, I'm just wondering if we'll be hearing any testimony from the department.
I would like to do that. That's something that I definitely think we need to do that. Yes, Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, and I appreciate we do have some answers to the questions that Senator Kent has brought up in terms of funding and long-term funding. And I know there's even some audience members that would like to weigh in. But I think knowing we have that opportunity in the Education Finance Committee, and I'll be sure to talk to the gentleman over here and Ms. Mackard, and we'll make sure that those questions get answered on our next stop. Thanks.
Thank you, Senator Dahl. Yes, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members, Darren Cordy with the Department of Education. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on this bill, and thank you to Senator Dahl for bringing it forward. I know it is a very complex bill. Our folks have been working with the Purpich folks to try and make sure all the technical and kind of implementation plans that would be in the bill, you know, everything works right. Most of our work and concerns have been on the fiscal end. On the policy end, this is something that you know, to keep Crosswinds open is something that we have been advocating for since last session, and especially after last session, we had, you know, there was a 1-year agreement signed by both Roseville and Harambe, and then Purpich and Crosswinds to keep the schools operating for 1 year. And so we were very clear with them that, you know, that was a 1-year kind of a shot, and we wanted to make sure that we could help them and work with them to get something done this year. to make sure that there is a stable structure moving forward for both of these schools and that we're not working on these kind of year-to-year agreements. So certainly think that, you know, this is the most prudent way to go as far as the options that are out there, and look forward to continuing to help work with them. I think, as you said, you know, this is kind of a new thing. I think as we continue to move along, there'll probably be, you know, some items that come up as far as, you know, prior you were part of a school district, now you're part of Purpich. You know, how does that work with all the different kind of terms and definitions that are laid out in statute? But I, you know, I'm confident that between the more than competent fiscal staff we have back at the department, and with Purpich, MMB, and with legislative staff, and with you all, that we're going to be able to find a solution on this one.
Thank you, Mr. Cordy. You have any questions for the department? Okay. Any other questions or comments, members? Senator Wicklund.
A question. Will we, when we hear the bill in finance, will we have an opportunity to review cost figures? Will there be a fiscal analysis provided so we'll have that information?
I'm pretty sure, Senator, that would be the case, but Senator Wigger, what is
Madam
your
Chair,
impression?
Yes, we will review.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, and, you know, any questions that you have, you know, for the chair, I think it will be incredibly important that you just, you know, let him know, because that will help him prepare, you know, some the paperwork that is necessary, the answers that you need in order to make the appropriate decision. Senator Dahl, any final questions?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. And again, thank you for indulging me in running between Crosswinds, Purpich, and propane. So I appreciate that, and I'm sorry I missed some of the excellent testimony I'm sure that was given today. But I would like to, at this time, if move Senate File 530 as amended to Education Finance.
Thank you. Just so on that motion, all of those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed say no. Motion is adopted, and thank you, Senator, for your patience and for organizing this and inviting parents to really provide some very significant testimony. Thank you. Thank you, members. And this concludes the business of our committee, and we are adjourned.